So we're going to go ahead and get started with our work session. It is Tuesday, January 8th, 2019, at 6:01 p.m. And we are meeting here today in the Spiritual Community Center. And on our agenda today, we'll start with introduction and slash presentation of both high school administrators. So that's what's on our mind.
Well, thank you for letting me visit again. I've been talking to Greg for a couple months now. Never had a little line schedule, so I'm happy to be here. I try to keep my 2 minutes, but there's a lot I'd like to share. First of all, just the partnership that we have with Cedar Hills on the island, we just could not be more appreciative of the great work relationship we have with you guys. I know we wish we had more space for more activities. I know you guys are too in expanding, but just that partnership and relationship, we just really appreciate the work that goes into that. My father's on the city council in Orem, and so I know what you, not personally because I've never been on the city council, but I hear some of the stories and some of the conversations. So thank you for what you do. I hope someone says thank you to my dad at some point, but you know what I'm doing. So a couple of notes with Lone Key. I love being a Lone Key. This is year two for me, so I feel like I'm getting my bearings a little bit more, but what an incredible school your kids get to go to and be part of the community with what we do over there. Just a couple of highlights just to share an update with you. Some of the new data, I don't have a stakeholder report yet because the data from the state just came out, so we're still extrapolating that and trying to figure out what that means, and we'll share that in the next few weeks when we get our data with our stakeholder report. But just so you're aware, our some data has come out that I can share. Our AP scores, many of the students at Lone Key, AP is a very long-standing tradition. Some of our students need to keep that tradition going. We passed over 1,000 tests with three or better, with a score of three or better. That was one of the tops in the states for sure. And it's one of those that we keep getting questions asked how we're accomplishing that. It's just, we have amazing families in our community, we have amazing kids that come in, but we also have teachers that work very diligently to keep that. It's tough to pass the AP test. I won't ask who has passed the AP test in early, but it's very, very difficult. Some of the numbers that you take are incredible. But to have that, we're very proud of that. We are second in this state right now with concurrent enrollment numbers. The only school beating us right now is Westlake High School because they have twice as many kids as us. We're going to get them next year, but to keep that going, give opportunities for students to get college credit in high school. We're also tops in the ACT score when that came out in the state, nation, and in our district. Recently, in the Daily Herald, we were recognized for the top sports story for having 10 of 19 state championships in sports in 2018. That was pretty amazing, pretty fun to see. And I will mention a couple of second places we have that the teams have done very well. But when you combine the academics with athletics, and then we jump into the arts as well, we also have a state championship in our band program, our marching band, which includes a ton of kids in there. We're very proud of those kids as well. We've had musicals, we've had art shows, we've had tons of different opportunities for kids to really branch out, be able to take and do the things that they really have a passion for. And on top of that, we also increased our graduation rate last year by a solid percent, over the 95% ratio. There is a ceiling there, so we'll keep trying to hit it, but we're right there in climbing. Last thing I want to mention really quick is just one of our focuses is creating that culture of wellness for students to feel good about being in school. We've involved many students, parents, community groups to help us with our mission, vision, values, and goals. As we get into that, we continue to try to get that partnership. We have an awesome partnership with our PTSA right now to have a service group every Thursday during lunchtime. One of the things I noticed when I walked around, and I have four kids, and when I walk around at lunchtime, I would see kids sitting by themselves, and I appear to be very rough and mean, but I've got a pretty sensitive heart. So when I see some of the kids that don't have places to go, it really gets at them. I want to remind kids our lunch, and I'm hoping they have people to be with. And so with partnership with PTSA, we have a service group because we notice when we have activities at lunchtime, kids gravitate to those. They get involved, and they're there, even if they're not involved or doing, participating in it, they're there and they're part of something. And to create openness and opportunities that way, the service group's been incredible from our PTSA started a couple weeks ago. We're very proud of that. And then to involve with the Peak Initiative, that's just the culture we're trying to build. Some of my personal goals are to make sure that I want kids to work hard, I want them to grow, I want them to excel in whatever area it is they want to excel in, both academically, both in the arts and sports, but also to, when they come into Lone Peak, I want them to feel welcome, I want them to feel cared for, I want them to feel that they have someone they can support and help with if they need it. But we are very excited to continue to offer all the things we do, and just again, thank you for your support. And I will share the stakeholder form if you get it. I've given Greg a hat. I'm actually a few short, so I'll catch up with you. You guys all have a hat, wear them in pride in the community, wear them often. If it wears out, you need a new one, go see me. Okay? And I also have, I gave to Greg as well, he's got a reaching pass that he gave have at the school for free. Just stop in and present your pass. Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Any
questions? Any questions from the council?
I have a question. What is the current enrollment for the three grades? Are they even? Pretty even?
They're pretty even. We actually see in our pattern of growth, we've been here, we have a little dip for this year and next year, and then we just sprout right back up. But we're hovering next year in the 2500. We've been close, right, 2590, 2570, 80, right around there this year. We're going to drop about 60 students next year in order to climb, but right around the
So when is your graduating class? Coming
this year. We're 846 last year.
And coming up is 800 this year.
Yeah, it's going to be in the mid 800s again.
Is it still? I don't have kids there, but it used to be like they couldn't even walk through the halls. The brains, has it got less and it's getting better? I mean,
you know, it's. So I came from a junior high of 1700, and that felt more packed. Maybe it was because they were more squirrely and they jumped on each other and they ran through the halls. But I think with the layout we have, it is crowded. You definitely see it during class breaks. But with different, with the satellite we have, with the different areas, MATC where kids are going to different places, it works well. And kids, I think, navigate, they know that the two main 100, 200 hallways are pretty packed. And so they can circumnavigate around the outside and get access that way. So I think they kind of find those patterns. Yes, it's not perfect, but I can make it through the hall. I mean, so if the student says they're late in class, I'm like, okay, I'm testing this. I'm not from farthest point to farthest point. I made it. Of course, nobody talked to me along the way, but I'm still.
Thank you.
We really appreciate all that you do for our students as well. The relationship we have with your great country, right, all the time about how easy it is to work with Lumpy, so we appreciate it.
Thank you. And if we can be of any other help, or if you have any questions for me, my person is part of our usual help. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Bigwood, what did this talk to the topic about the agenda?
Say it again.
What would you like to discuss?
I believe the item tonight is going to be part of parks based on the number of emails that I've sent. And you guys too. So you want to talk about Harvey Park a little bit?
Okay.
Yeah. Optimistic that people will walk away from this nice meeting, because I know they kind of come with plenty of an array of emotions, but I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll walk away either content or with an understanding or pleased with what's happened since the last time we met. I think I bring good news, but it's all that I give all that, right? So Charlotte
spent a lot of time today putting together a history of public parks so that we can get a better understanding of kind of how we got from where we started to where we are today. And it's a long, it's a convoluted history if you go really in detail. But I think it's important, it tells an important story about why we're doing things right now the way we're doing them. I think that there's an explanation there. And this will warm up and show you the original concept plan that was presented about 10 years ago. But you know that Harvey Park has been, that land has been in litigation for a number of years, and we're grateful for the opportunity we have to be able to develop a park at this point. But this was the concept plan when I arrived in the city back in about 2010. You can see that this whole parcel here from that includes the school and the park is about 24 acres. The Alpine School District condemned half of that land and built Deerfield Elementary, leaving us with this 12-acre parcel as we currently have. Originally, it was going to be two little league fields and a pony baseball diamond with four tennis courts. These are volleyball courts and two basketball courts and some grass open space. So soon it's probably going to be designated for retention because they'd have to retain the water or stormwater somewhere. And then two pavilions, you see the larger pavilion here, and then they're just going to go up. That was in 2011. And it kind of sat, that was the plan, and it sat that way for a number of years until we met with Insight Design and redesigned the park to be, let me shut this down a little bit. But we redesigned the park to reflect what we felt were the current wishes of the residents based on survey data. So in 2017, we hired Insight Design, and we did a survey, and we found that 61% of residents from Swanee wanted to would pay a bond or taxes for a splash pad or a water play area. So we felt like the splash pad, which is this tricolor area here, was the number one priority for the park, getting that in. Sledding Hill was 27%. If you've been down to the park, it's not really an option on this land, but it's a good idea. Mountain biking trails, once again, not really an option, but that's 25% as well. Tennis and pickleball courts were 25%. Outdoor amphitheater was 15%. Softball, baseball, diamond complex was 9%. But it was clear that the water play area was the priority for the vast majority of the residents, even though the earlier concept design that showed for the park did not include a splash pad. So as we went through this design, we made sure that we eliminated some of the pickleball courts, some of the tennis courts, one and two were shown in this. Added pickleball courts and left one of the basketball courts there was originally two. We got more feedback from residents and staff, and we added this strip of parking here. There were the addition of additional 10 pickleball courts here. I'm bringing the total to six. But then we got resident complaints saying that, because I don't follow the news story anymore, where was it ended up, it was staying in the field. Residents complaining about the noise coming in front of the wall and play. It's a constant kind of. Anyway, so we went to Insight and said, how can we best mask this noise? And what we came up with was pretty much the design of the park right here. So we have six pickleball courts shielded by a tennis ball, or two tennis balls. Playground area, splash pad, a basketball court, grass open area, there's a baseball diamond, a large soccer field complex, and then these other pieces here are open space slash potential basins. So this is the current iteration of the parking park. And it probably surprised most people if they went down to the land and looked at it, but this is the current grading plan. And from this northeast corner up here to the southwest corner here, it drops 23 feet. So it drops quite a bit. It's perceptible to the eye, but you'd be shocked if it's that much. So as we're designing this park, we have to put in flat scape. We have to put in flat field space. You see that these fields slow just gradually, probably imperceptible. These lines right here, there's a big berm that's going to be done here. So the baseball line sits lower into the ground.
So it's almost like that's a barrier there. And we had the residents, we had a number of residents come and really question the safety of baseball diamond as it was designed. So I think staff took a lot of time to go out and look at other Little League baseball diamonds and see what was out there. So let me actually first talk about our health design. So from home plate here, ball hit to the curb gutter is 380 feet. So it's a good smack. To give you some perspective, a home run at Yankee Stadium is 318 feet along the left field line, which puts it out right here. So that's kind of just an idea of how big this field actually is. These lines are actually designated showing what a Little League outfield or home run line typically is. From, and this is kind of perceptible, but I can say right around here is the backstop. I don't believe it was included in the initial bid, but we do have a design for it, and we've gotten a bid for it.
Our contractor, though, had bid it out even though it wasn't in the bid, so he gave us that.
Yeah, and we found that because that was the big concern, is how do you put a fence in? Do you want a baseball diamond without a fence? No, you don't. So we talked about the possibility of baseball diamonds. But based on the numbers we're looking at for that fencing there, backstop and then along the baselines, we feel that you can do the baseball diamond in phase one. So we're fairly optimistic on that. But this is the post fence barrier. So a ball hit from home plate, foul ball to the left, that clears this right here. From here, this point, this parking lot, to home plate is about 120 feet, I believe. It's, once again, it's a good hit still. But possible for the league. But as we went around to other baseball complexes in the area, I want to show what others are dealing with. Is this, I don't think you can.
120 what?
120. And that's not a direct shot. That's outside the fence, outside the line, yeah. Yeah, it's a good fix. But what I wanted to show was that for a baseball diamond, you can mitigate just about many of the dangers, but there's always going to be an issue there. And I think I would go the way our park is designed up against any other Little League park in the area. I think it's either as safe or safer than many of them for pedestrians, for parking, for other park goers. So this is Lehigh's softball field, you can see here. So keep in mind, the way I showed you was 380 feet from home plate to the curb gutter, nearest car to park for a new ball or an in-play ball. From home plate here to these cars is 200 feet. So park at your own risk around here. This next one is Orem City Center Park. Once again, using 380 feet is the magic number. For this field right here, from home plate into the smack dab in the middle of the All of Abilities Playground area, which is really awesome. Go check it out. It's 380 feet. But so you have this Little League field right here.
Is that the one I've been here by close to?
This is right behind the Orem City Center.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay.
From home plate here to these cars, 195 feet. So.
Do they have a tall fence along there?
No, it's a standard 6-foot fence.
Oh, wow.
Good question. This is over in Orem on the fourth south, Cascade Elementary right here. There's a baseball diamond complex. From this home plate to this playground is 233 feet. Then I have Provo Harmon Park. You can see from this home plate to this parking area is 267 feet. Into the street out here is 308 feet. So these are literally diamonds. They're designed for 200 feet or about a home run. And then the last thing I think to make my point is this is our own Harvey. This is our own Heisel's Hollow. I'll show you that using the measurement tool here from home plate up the sideline, up into the hillside, is 380 feet. So most people don't drive down Cane Road thinking they're going to get hit by a baseball. Now, if an adult and a bunch of his friends went down there to just go hit some balls, they could go hit something to Cane Road. I don't doubt it. But these fields aren't designed for adult play. The field that we're proposing to be built is the same size as what this regulation building field. From home plate to first base is 60 feet. 60 feet to each base. Major league diamond is 90 feet. But you can see that if you look at these other fields, the field that we're proposing is what I say safe as or safer than most. So then parking, we went around to some other baseball lines. This is an archive park. You can see where people hit. Maybe a nice foul ball will hit my car. Same thing here in another archive park. This one's in Alpine Burgess Park. You can see from home plate. I can hit that one. I'm a terrible hitter. So basically my point is that A, I think we can do the baseball diamond in phase one. And B, I think that the way that we designed it is very safe. Any questions on the baseball diamond?
We talked about last time about eliminating the sand or whatever.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that, but since it was in the initial bid, I believe we can leave it in.
Keep it in
the bid, add the fencing, not remove that concrete, and have a safe facility that's easy to use. Now, the one thing that we don't have there is a home run fence or an outfield fence. And I don't propose putting one in, just because that would preclude us from using it for other activities down there, like lacrosse and flag football, which is the primary use for the city athletic programs.
So how high is the berm?
That's the berm? I believe it's, what was it? I think it's like 5 or 6 feet. It's nothing like high sense.
Right.
But it's a good 5 or 6 feet. And that berm starts at about 360 feet out there. So
yeah, that takes pretty hard.
You have to hit it even harder to hit it in the street. So that berm, although it's not designed to be protective, it does serve that purpose. So I don't think that there's a need for it. We talked last time about a possible fencing along that building. I just don't see balls from Little League play flying into Harvey Boulevard. I just don't see it happening. That's not to say somebody can't do it. I see it as a huge outlier rather than a norm.
Okay. And this is built, specifically for Little League. It's not built for the adult play.
Yeah. So if you were to look at these dimensions, this is Harvey Park. Like I said, from home plate to first base, and between each base is 6 feet. It's a standard Little League field. It's a 7 league field.
I got a feeling from last time that the concerns were about adult play.
Yeah. And so it's not an adult field. And if people use the field for outside purposes, I mean, there's not, what do we do? But it's not an adult field. So there's not going to be rec league softball games down there.
Big hit on a softball, even for adults. So
you have to really be trying to bring one out there.
You be on the ball.
Or be batting from the outfield out.
So I don't want to go on record saying it can't happen. I just don't think it'll be nearly as frequent as people may think. So that's the baseball diamond. So I know that there's a lot of concern about being able to do the baseball diamond. I'm optimistic that that can be done in phase one. We met with the contractor from Keller Construction last Friday, because if you recall from our December 18th meeting, the other big concern was the concessions building. I'm going to stop calling the concessions building and call the storage bathroom, because that's actually two primary codes, so we're hardly ever going to use concessions. But per city code, we have to have that building under 400,000. We're that building is being bid at like 530-ish, way over, way more than we want to spend. What we did is we went with him and we sat down and kind of explained what the purpose of the building was, and he explained the way that we could save money. We eliminated the basement, the process for that storage upstairs using the kind of the width of that stairwell down in the basement we have in Kentucky. And so it's a one-story building. We have the same amount of storage. The storage of the controls for the splash pad will be upstairs, which will be more convenient for maintenance. Wait for a call all day and he calls now. Call times.
Go ahead, take it. I'll work on it.
No. But we and then we redesigned, we changed the materials that we're using as well. Rather than architectural concrete, using block, split face block with a smooth surface that could prevent some graffiti, and then stick frame on the inside. We can do this building for, we estimated about $350,000. So were there big savings there? And so my point, I'm anticipating a number of people coming tonight to share their concerns about the baseball diamond and the pinball courts. And so I was meeting with Charles today to say, talking about, like, as we've gone through the process of this park, I put down some priorities. Like, one, our priority was to do it in a way was to develop a plan to start part of the park without having to use any debt financing means. I know that some council members are okay with it, but we felt like we could do this in a way that we didn't have to go to water. We didn't have to do a short-term loan, and we've done that. But a sub-note or footnote there would be that because we're doing it that way, because it's being phased, we can do anything, but we can't do everything in the park initially. Some things are going to be left out. And so when we're talking about what we're going to leave out, what we're going to put in, we felt like the amenities in the initial phase of Harvey Park would be more important to put with amenities that were not found elsewhere in the city or in the area. To do so would, in a cost-effective manner. So based on the survey results, we felt like Splash Pad was by far and away the most important thing to put into the park, as well as the play area, but also be able to move the family festival down into that area in the upcoming years. So that means that we need to have shade, we need to have trees, we need to have pavilions, we need to have seating, we need to have parking. And then some of these items like tennis and pickleball courts. The tennis pickleball court hybrid that we proposed in December that got approved for the initial phase was kind of an attempt to placate both parties. But we feel, I'm going to use the word cautiously optimistic, that based on some of this value engineering with the building and some of these other amenities, we're moving a seating wall, we're moving some pavers. Some of these items that we're going to bring some aesthetic pleasantness to the park, I think we can remove in the initial phase, maybe later, but it will allow us, hopefully, based on change orders, and that's always a big if with construction, but will allow us to put in pickleball courts as well, three pickleball courts in the initial phase. And that, like I said, that's based on change orders. In my discussion with Charles this morning, and I think Jeff maybe feel the same way, but change orders happen in a project like this. Even in a smaller project, they happen. But we would anticipate probably most of the change orders being involved in the widening of Harvey Boulevard rather than inside the park itself. And that money is being paid out of street impact fees. So pickleball courts obviously would be paid in street impact fees. So, like I said, I'm hoping that people walk away from tonight's meeting either content or happy or pleased or relieved. I don't really know, but I think it's good news. But yeah. Any questions on what we've kind of gone over here?
So, can you pull it back for that site plan again?
Yeah, for Harvey Park?
Yeah, so I'm concerned about the transition of Harvey Boulevard from our property to what is.
Yes,
is he gonna, do we need some right of way from him? Is he going to be willing to donate it? Are we going to roughly stop it with barricades like it is now? Or what's the plan?
Right now, there's a gradual, just kind of a gradual turning out of the rough Jersey barriers. To go down there right now, at about this point, there's just a couple of Jersey barriers in the road. Right. So this will actually probably be a softer transition from the wide road to the narrower PG portion. And Pleasant Grove has discussed in the past widening this road on their portion. How far they'll get in that discussion will be up for debate.
And I think the interesting thing about this is with the east-west connector going in, there will now be a straight shot from Canyon Road on this road all the way to American Fork. And I think that's going to change some things for Pleasant Grove as well.
I agree. I think that'll put some pressure on them to widen their portion. I think people will know that that's their portion that's kind of bottlenecking things.
And the county really opened up that intersection with the Canyon Road reconstruction as
yes,
well. You have a straight visual shot all the way down.
It's a really nice, finally safe turn.
Yeah.
It's a really nice turn.
Carson, I have a question about the lights. I know that was a concern last time. Where are the lights on the phasing?
Phase two, lights are very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. So let's break out the lights into two separate types of lighting. Baseball field lighting and court lighting. The plans called for like 30-foot poles on the courts. I think we can get a better deal if we do the box lighting internally to the courts, but it's inside, it's mounted on the fence. That's kind of what Pleasant Grove has at Manila Park. You can do a little dial, you can turn one light. But the real expensive lighting is the field lighting. This is the stadium lighting, the big bulbs that people are concerned about for light pollution.
Yeah, the field lighting's, I think, $450,000 was the estimate, and for the court lighting, it's like around $100,000. So it's quite a bit different.
Is there a clamor for lighting on a baseball field?
There's a clamor to not do it.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So,
is it baseball a summer game?
Let me tell you that, for example, flag football is a fall sport, and I remember this was the issue when I was the rec director years ago, and I'm sure that business hasn't changed, and it's the same problem Greg has, is that you have to wrap the games up by about 7:45 later in the season, or else it starts getting dark for the last 10, 15 minutes of the play. So you have a really short frame of time you can hold to post games. And our rec programs have been really successful, and it's kind of made it so it's very difficult to schedule because it fills space. This will allow us to do more and more games. I don't see field lighting as a huge priority, but it is something that's very nice to have. It's not on all the time, though. So if people thought that it was going to be every night, all night, that's not the case. At least in the city's point.
I'm just going to say, as a mom of a former football player, I liked when they got over earlier because it's cold that night.
It does. So right now we don't have that option. Jeff?
Just a comment there. Lighting will be provided along Harvey Boulevard, street lighting, and also parking lot lighting. And so there is some lighting.
Sorry, yeah, the third kind of lighting required for safety reasons.
Can I add something too?
Please.
From our perspective, would we like lights? Sure. I mean, but honestly, for $450,000, we can work around it. We don't need it. Chandler's got a great point, but the only thing that affects us on this flag football, but we can work around that because I think the space will be a little bit bigger. So, for saving $450,000,
yeah, we'll have another field to play. You can play the Mesquite, you can play Harvey, so we'll have more options. So, I think it does make it easier, but that is the issue.
Yes.
So, we talked about this last time, but can on the court lighting, our park curfew is 11 p.m., right? Can we, if they're the ones that you can turn on and off yourself, can we still control it so at 11 o'clock you can't turn them on anymore?
I believe that there are mechanisms that you can shut it off at a certain time. So it forces them to.
Because I think that would alleviate some of the concerns of the people in that area as well.
And those lights aren't as high, so they don't project as wide. They're really kind of contained into the court themselves, and it kind of gets pretty dark and fast outside the court. So I don't know, I mean, obviously you can see it from your window, but you can't. It's not even spilling into your window and lighting the kitchen.
Well, and one thing that I would explain to those residents as well, having lived by a park, and maybe Greg Ludlow can probably answer this as well, but when you've got that lighting at your park, there's less likelihood that people are hanging out there at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning to be positioned to be as well.
Light is your bread.
Yeah.
So the Harvey Boulevard parking area would be lit until.
There will be street lights along there.
What about the parking lots? I mean, that all night prevent people from.
There's no parks there now. Yeah, that's something we can discuss.
Our other parks don't have.
No, we don't light parking all night.
Does Bayhill have one? I think it does. Maybe not.
Bayhill, like,
yes.
I think Bayhill does have one in the parking lot.
You must be.
Make it go soft.
Yeah. But it's nice because the people are hanging out there. You can see they're visible.
Yeah.
As a policeman drives by, they can see that there are cars parked in the parking lot that obviously shouldn't be there.
Right. And I haven't heard of anyone complaining from Bayhill and Tipco that the parking lot lighting is causing issues.
No, we've had some of the
lighting.
So one other question. I remember from our discussion last meeting, we had kind of said, well, maybe we'll just turn that baseball field into a multi-purpose, not do an infield. But now we're putting the infield back. Is that what we're
doing? Yeah, so this will be all sand.
Okay.
That still allows us, though, this is why I say we don't do the home run fence or the outfield fence, because if you have a fence that's coming around here, then all of a sudden, all of this area is
still useless.
Whereas if we don't have that fence, then we can still play games through that area. And I know it's not ideal for a baseball game, but I mean,
this well, maybe during baseball season you can put up the temporary
fence.
Because I think Art Guy actually has that.
Well, they probably do.
Yeah.
So Lone Peak Youth Baseball, I know Councilmember Bailey's team, they practice mostly through May and June. And so there could be a temporary fencing up. And then July, August, September, we have down from flag football across and sports under that. I mean, there's ways
to no,
it.
There's
probably options. Probably accommodate that day.
I'm just going to give an update as well. I know that Mike and Ben Bailey were part of this, but when we were going through negotiations of purchasing this land, the LDS Church wanted to purchase 7 acres of it at the time and build a space center there. We did not agree to that because we knew that this was our last open space. So they purchased the land south of Deerfield. And it was announced on Sunday that they are going to begin construction of a stake center there in April. So those two construction projects will probably be right on the elementary.
This piece right here is the one that the church purchased.
Who wants the ownership on right now?
Who's this? It says Corporation of President
the Church
of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
So remember they wanted to purchase part of ours?
Yes.
So they purchased that instead. So the stake, the Manila stake split on Sunday. Now there's the Manila stake and the Manila Creek stake, and that parcel will start learning to start building in April. So you'll see construction.
Has it always been owned by the church?
No, it's very recent. The church, when we were negotiating with the Harveys to purchase it, the church approached the city and said, if we purchase, would you rezone it? And we put our foot down and said, no, we're not going to. Unfortunately, we made that call because we said we've got enough churches in Cedar Hills, but there's plenty of space.
We need another park.
So their access is off that little knuckle, right?
Who did
own it? Is that a Harvey ownership?
Was
that Harvey?
Yeah. So if you go right here, this is David Dixie Harvey. This one, David Dixie Harvey. Yeah, Harvey's on all.
It's not okay.
But anyway, so you'll see construction going on both sides of that. And now we have 4 stakes that covers the areas.
Okay. Any other questions on Harvey Park?
No, I just wish you could make your presentation before public comment, but you know.
Well, I think we're gonna do it like we did last time. So we'll have public comment at the beginning of the meeting. Then on the discussion item, we will do your presentation. We'll allow public comment again. Council can debate, and if we feel like there are a lot of people who still want to discuss, I'm fine opening it up for people to talk with you guys about it. I'd rather get all the feedback now and move forward.
But let's just know they can give their comment. Let's not comment to them.
No. But I don't want to do that back and forth. It's just we'll do public comment. And we do this with every item. We usually do a presentation, open up a public comment. And then the council can deliberate, and if we feel like we need to hear from more, we can, but not the back and forth, for sure. Especially since it might be a full house. Anything else on the agenda? We've got about.
Can I talk 5 minutes about business licensing?
Let's do it.
Enjoy that. Okay, so based on the feedback that the staff got from on the home occupation business licensing, we redrafted the code, and I decided that this would be the best time to just go wholesale changes on it and add some stuff that I feel like maybe flesh out the city's policies a little bit better. Initially, the code was just, if you go in the proposed code in your packets, it was just the black portion. It was 31B-3, the requirements and conditions. That was the only portion of the code that we had. I wanted to flesh that out a little bit more to add purpose, add that licenses are required. In doing what other cities were doing, I like the idea of just listing prohibited uses and just getting those off the table. Carving out exemptions, those exemptions are typically done per state code, rather than just being pragmatic. Also, revocation process and then appeal process. So those sections were added. As you've gone through that, any questions on any of those sections that you've been added?
I have a question.
Sure.
So maybe I'm reading it wrong, but you talked about percentage of use of the accessory building.
Yeah.
Right? What section is that in?
31B38. Home occupation shall occupy an area of not more than 25% of the combined total living area of the main building and accessory structure.
Okay. Right. So are you saying they cannot use their entire accessory structure for a business?
No, they could. Let's say your accessory structure is 500 square feet and your home was 3,000 square feet.
So percentage of your home?
Totally.
Not a question. Yeah. Okay.
But if your home is 500 square feet and your accessory structure is 2,000 square feet, so the obviously it's 500 square feet. You see my point?
Yes. Okay. Thank you. That was my only question. It looks good.
I appreciate your work on this. I really like the new code, and I think it allows residents, as we discussed last time, to be able to have a business from their accessory dwelling unit that doesn't cause a nuisance to your neighbors.
As I went through it today, there was a couple changes I wanted to just bring up. In the purpose of A, kind of the middle section, it says home occupation is defined as an occupation or profession in which the associated activity or use is clearly incidental and secondary to the residential use of a dwelling unit. Now, when I add the words an accessory building, there's an alteration to the exterior of the dwelling. The licensing required, this comes from the state code, this formalizes a policy that we've already been doing in the city. The state code says that if you don't have an offsite impact, if your business is home occupation, you don't have to get a business license. And we've notified people of that, but still, a lot of people still want a business license for tax purposes. That still takes time to set up and run. So we don't charge them the $60 business license fee, but we do charge them $20 to set up their business license and send them, I think it's $5 to send them a paper license. And then they just $5 every year to get that paper license renewed. And then on the prohibited uses, I think the underlying themes here are that businesses that produce a nuisance or that may not be able to mitigate a potential hazard are just prohibited. So you have noise nuisances, but also you have some of these mechanics that have the potential to really do a number on, say, storm drain if they don't drain it right. I mean, there's certain items that mechanic shops have to have. They're not found in residential homes, so we want to prevent those from happening. And that's not to say that somebody can't fix their car in their garage or build a table in their garage, but that can't go on 8 hours a day, every day.
I'm just curious, the reasoning for the tattooing.
It seemed like a common theme for all the other cities that had a business license prohibited. So that's kind of piggybacked on that.
So what if we had somebody who did beauty services in their home, they did cosmetic permanent makeup, which is tattooing, are we excluding them from being able to do that?
Technically you are.
Do we want to? I mean, what's the justification, I guess?
We need to be more...
I mean, do you want to do excluding cosmetic? I mean, they're all cosmetic to a certain degree.
How would you work?
How would you feel if your neighbors opened a tattoo parlor next to you? Not a cosmetic eyelash or eyebrow, but sleeve tattoo.
I mean, we can address it if it comes up. We don't have to address it right now, but maybe we could say exclusion is permanent. I was just curious.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good point. I don't know.
It's becoming more popular.
Yes, it is.
I don't know that it would have much of an impact. What would be the impact of it? I'm just playing devil's advocate of a tattoo business.
My initial thought would be that the initial licensing inspection required in the state. There could be something there. I've never looked into the process to open up a tattoo parlor, so I'm not totally familiar with it. But my guess is that there are certain requirements that you have to meet in the state.
But beauty parlors, too, I mean, we have those, and they need special licensing, right?
And a business license.
Do they have to have special licensing for the state to operate out of their home?
I don't believe we ask that. But you do have to have a cosmetology license.
Yeah.
So you raise that question, and I'm playing devil's advocate too, because we said what I wouldn't bother me.
Wouldn't bother me either.
But I mean, I don't like tattoos personally. But I mean, if my neighbor had a tattoo business in his garage, they only do them one at a time. So I mean, it's like it's
not. I don't care what you're doing. You can't do it in his garage.
But the next time, you know, there's
can
a car park, an extra one car park there, whatever. Yeah.
If you feel that way, I mean, you can strike it out. That's up to you guys.
Well, it's not reducing stuff, right?
Yeah.
The amount of traffic, we have regulations on everything around it, prevents something getting out of hand.
Right.
And I'm sorry, does your list show, because there was a list I sent to Joel to review, and I noticed in that list there were three items that were not on that list that were, I think, are on this, storage facilities, green yard sales, and vehicle sales, those are on your list there.
Yeah, so the yard sale is just cars, is that the problem?
Yard sale?
Too many cars, yeah.
Yeah. You end up with too many cars and not one parking space.
That's a permanent yard sale also.
Okay.
All right. One other question I have before we adjourn is for the council on committee assignments. Councilmember Bailey, do you currently not have an assignment for you? Would you like to be on the finance committee?
Whenever you like.
Okay, does that work with your schedule? You should meet before 4:30?
We can be accommodating.
Okay, so we'll move Councilmember Bailey to finance since Councilmember Ellsworth is on Family Festival, and I didn't get feedback from anybody else that they wanted to change, so we didn't change anything. So Mike will be on that one later this year. Okay, all right, then that will be the plan.
Except.
There's
this. Yeah, I've got a conflict now on Thursday mornings.
With Monty? I think Howard.
Okay.
I think Howard going to.
He goes away in July, so.
Well, and I think even up until that point, if the agenda doesn't have something that really impacts us, I mean, they're going to come at the budget and we can't vote on any of those anyway. I don't think any of us plan on being there if it's not something that we need to be there for. Because we can't vote anyway. Yes, because we just approved the final agreement.
It got moved to, they're looking at the 30th?
31st.
Oh, that got moved?
She sent another email out later today saying that has to be rescheduled, so it might be the 31st.
Okay.
That one will be up because we need to approve the buyout, the final agreement.
Also a Thursday, but there's not.
It's also a Thursday.
I think so.
But once that's done, there might be some ongoing matters, maybe budget amendment in the current budget year, but there's not a whole lot of items that are going to be, because they're going to be talking about their budgets.
So I think we'll just play it.
So leave me there. I'm probably going to have to defer to Denise most of the time.
Okay. If there's nothing for us to vote on, then I don't think any of us will be there because there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
7:30.
It used to be 7, so 7:30 is late now.
I don't think that changes to 5:00.
All right. Then I will take a motion to adjourn work session.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion by Councilor Geddes. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilor Anderson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? You will adjourn work session.